This episode features discussions of kidnapping, murder, and violence that some people may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised, especially for children under 13.
Richard Phillips had been trapped on board a 28-foot lifeboat with four desperate Somali pirates for 2 days now, and the situation just kept getting worse.
The pirates were tense, convinced the Navy was going to try to shoot them and rescue Phillips. Richard Phillips might have been worth a lot of money to the pirates, but he now represented a giant risk, and there was no way for them to cut their losses, not unless they reached Somalia.
That night, the pirates began to chant, something in Somali. Phillips didn't know what it was, but it seemed religious, intense, and angry. The pirates were now keeping Richard Phillips tied up tightly. As the chanting continued, Abdou Ali Moussi, the pirate's undisputed leader, handed his tall second-in-command, Adi, a pistol.
"You do it," said Moussi, looking right at Phillips, and Phillips' blood ran cold.
They couldn't be serious, thought Phillips. He was their only chance of getting out alive.
But maybe the pirates no longer believed that was possible.
This is Hostage, the new Parcast podcast telling the stories behind the most captivating hostage situations and the people inside them.
We also delve into psychological tactics used in hostage negotiations, as well as explore the psychological toll captivity takes on the human brain.
We're your hosts. I'm Irma Blanco.
And I'm Carter Roy. At Parcast, we are grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network.
And if you enjoyed today's episode, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. It really does help us. We also now have merch. Head to parcast.com/merch for more information.
This is our second episode on the capture and retaking of the Maersk, Alabama, an American cargo ship whose crew was taken hostage by Somali pirates on April 8, 2009. Today, we'll focus on the Somali pirates' kidnapping of the ship's captain, Richard Phillips, after the American crew successfully reclaimed the Maersk.
Last week, we learned about the four pirates that attacked and took over the American cargo carrier, the Maersk, Alabama, to face off with its tough-minded captain, Richard Phillips. The pirates, led by Abdou Ali Moussi, were able to quickly take over the ship. While most of the crew stayed hidden in the engine room and the boiler room on the lowest deck, Phillips played dumb and incompetent while trying to maneuver them off the ship.
After a tense 6-hour standoff, the crew captured and subdued Abdou Ali Moussi while Phillips let the other pirates take a lifeboat and the $30,000 in cash in the emergency safe. The crew came close to successfully trading Moussi for Phillips, but at the last minute, the Somali pirates, seeking a bigger reward, forced Phillips to stay on the covered lifeboat and attempted to get the boat to the Somali coast to hold Phillips for ransom.
In today's episode, we'll look at the complex relationship between Moussi and Phillips, dive into the tactics the U.S. Navy used in negotiations with the pirates, and the thrilling resolution of their standoff.
On board the Maersk, an enraged but still level-headed Shane Murphy, the ship's second-in-command, directed the crew to their stations to chase the lifeboat. They had to stop it from reaching land, where the pirates' reinforcements were, and both ships were only 240 nautical miles away from the Somali coast.
The crew were relieved and exhilarated to have their ship back, but they'd lost their captain. Chief Engineer Mike Perry alternated between rage at the pirates' betrayal and a let's-get-this-done pragmatism. There really wasn't a protocol for pirates kidnapping a ship's captain and fleeing in the ship's own lifeboat. They were, if you'll pardon the expression, in uncharted waters.
The Maersk's reliable top speed was 35 knots, or roughly 40 miles an hour. It could outpace the lifeboat, but it couldn't outmaneuver the much smaller craft.
But the Maersk did have a surprise on its side. The pirates had completely bought the fake mechanical failure of the Maersk Alabama. They had no idea the ship was still fully functional. So when they heard the motors of the Maersk start up, they turned to Phillips, angry and shocked.
Phillips blamed the ship's former mechanical problems on his first mate. Quote, "He's been after my job," he said. The pirates nodded, surprisingly sympathetic. They understood cutthroat competition.
But as Captain Phillips settled in for what he hoped would be a short trip, he was asking himself why on earth he'd gotten on that lifeboat. He could have stayed off it with quicker thinking.
And how was he going to get out of this? No matter, he'd have to figure something out.
Thankfully, this lifeboat was well equipped. At 28 feet long, it could hold its own in the water. It was made of solid fiberglass, had an engine, a roof, and 8 seats, but it was still awfully confined quarters for Phillips and 4 pirates.
And on top of that was the smell. John Conrad, who was captain of a cargo ship that also traveled the Somali coast, described it in an interview as a, quote, "new car smell gone bad, really plasticky," end quote.
There were rations on board for food, but Conrad added that they tasted like cardboard.
As Musse operated the con, the control panel for the lifeboat, he must have been thinking about how badly things had gone. 9 hours ago, he and his crew had taken over a large American cargo ship, a prize worth millions of dollars.
And now, he and his 3 fellow pirates had only a lifeboat, $30,000 cash, and 1 hostage, the man who'd already outwitted them numerous times.
Musse knew that if he and his team could just get to land, they could take Phillips and disappear into the crowded streets of the coastal cities Basaso or Mirka. And the pirates were just 240 nautical miles off the Somali coast, or 276 surface miles. At the lifeboat's speed of 20 miles per hour, they could land on the coast in just under 14 hours. However, because the nearest shore was in a competing warlord's territory, they were moving perpendicular to the coast to try and reach safer land.
Adi Elmi, the oldest of the 4 pirates, noticed with frustration that the Maersk now worked fine. He'd been tricked.
The 3rd pirate, Hamak, who was counting on the pirate bounty from this excursion to take care of his mother, looked nervously out of one of the windows. Was that a plane? There had been voices on the radio talking about air support yesterday and today. Hamak didn't know that those voices were really Captain Phillips and his trusted second-in-command, Shane Murphy, pretending to be American military pilots.
Hamak was worried, rightfully so, that the Americans would not take the kidnapping of one of their own lightly. Had the pirates been able to stay on the Maersk, they would have been much better equipped. At least they still had their guns, 2 AK-47s and a pistol.
The 4th and final pirate, a young man who looked to be 16 or 17, was just called Young Guy after the fact by journalists. He tried to use the radio to hail the Somali mothership, a large cargo boat the Somalis had captured years ago. There were more than a dozen pirates on the mothership.
That group might have been enough to even the odds if the Maersk pursued them, which it certainly seemed to be doing.
Adi let out a shout as the Maersk suddenly veered towards them. Musse frowned. "Your ship is trying to run us over," he said to Phillips.
"Damn right it is," said Phillips. Then he played the card that had worked before, saying, "The chief mate wants my job." Phillips wanted the pirates to think that the Maersk didn't care about him, because then he might be able to bluff them into surrendering. The pirates might have been risk takers, but they still wanted to stay alive.
This job, first and foremost, was about the money.
Musse pointed his gun at Phillips, quote, "Tell them to stop getting close to us," end quote.
Phillips got on the lifeboat's radio and responded, but he also took the chance to update Shane Murphy on the pirates' locations on the boat and their weapons.
He also let Shane know that if he escaped, he'd be going out the rear door of the lifeboat, and quietly instructed Shane to keep an eye out for a splash, speaking quickly in English so the pirates didn't have a chance of understanding. If the lifeboat continued on, Phillips intended to tread water exactly where he jumped off, as much as possible, to avoid any chance of a fatal accident.
But in the meantime, the pirates closed both the front and rear hatch to make sure Phillips had no chance of escape. At 2 a.m. the next morning, April 9th, the Navy destroyer USS Bainbridge entered the scene, charging towards the lifeboat and the Maersk at 30 knots, a brisk 35 miles an hour.
Moosey grabbed the radio to talk to the Navy. "No action, no military action," he shouted. They still had Phillips, and it was impossible for anyone to get close to the lifeboat without the pirates seeing them.
Moosey told his pirates in Somali that he reckoned that the U.S. Navy would pay a decent ransom to get Phillips back alive and unharmed. This was just a new phase of their journey.
The other pirates seemed to be less convinced. Although they were just hours from the coast, the naval destroyer could outrun them and overpower them. But Moosey had gotten them this far.
The Navy destroyer began to intimidate the lifeboat, getting close to the lifeboat's starboard side and then just drifting away. The captain of the Bainbridge was showing the pirates that at any point, the ship could eliminate the lifeboat. Only their hostage was preventing the Navy from doing so.
Surprisingly, Phillips didn't actually believe the Navy would be much help. He thought that they were just there to escort the pirates to shore, as other foreign navies had done when modern pirates captured their ships.
Moosey knew he'd underestimated Richard Phillips' crew, but he couldn't get a handle on the man himself. To be safe, he set up a routine. Two pirates would guard Captain Phillips with their AK-47s, while he'd pilot the ship, keeping his 9mm close by. The fourth pirate would sleep.
They rotated who got to sleep so that everyone could stay rested. Moosey needed the pirates fresh if they were going to escape the Navy alive.
One thing that the pirates were not prepared for, the heat inside the lifeboat. Phillips thought it felt like a sauna.
By 6 a.m., 4 hours after the Navy first showed up, the temperature inside the lifeboat had risen to 105 degrees.
The lifeboat's engine was right beneath the floor, and the lifeboat hadn't been designed for it to run for 24 hours straight. The floor got to be so hot, everyone had trouble walking on it.
Phillips figured he was stuck with the pirates for an unknown time. He might as well try to build a rapport with them. It would keep the pirates calm and probably result in better treatment for him. He showed them where the food and water were, as well as the boat's flashlights.
Moosey's hand was still hurting him from the wound that the Maersk's chief engineer had given him, so Phillips got out a bandage. Moosey let Phillips clean out the wound in Moosey's hand and bandage it. Phillips even handed Moosey some ibuprofen as a painkiller.
But all the while, Phillips was looking for his opportunity to escape. He knew he'd only get one chance, and when it came, he was going overboard.
A group of FBI negotiators noted that it's vitally important for hostages to be patient. You should only try to escape if you have to, and you don't want that attempt to be ill-timed.
It's important to stay in that middle zone. Don't be so meek that your captors can push you around and harm you. But don't be so tough or unpredictable that you're a problem.
Hostage takers often have clear, achievable goals. So as long as you're alive and the hostage takers have some semblance of sanity, it's crucial, say the negotiators, to not rock the boat unless your survival is threatened.
Meanwhile, the Navy took over the rescue attempt. The Maersk, over the crew's objections, was redirected to safety off the coast of Kenya. The Navy wanted total control over the area and needed to remove any and all variables.
Shane Murphy didn't want to abandon his captain. No crew member did.
But they knew it was for the best. They just have to trust that the Navy could get Richard Phillips off that lifeboat and back to them somehow.
But for now, Abduwali Moosey was keeping a close eye on Phillips as darkness fell and the sun set.
Because of the lack of windows, it was difficult to see inside the lifeboat. Moosey would flash the lifeboat's flashlight at Phillips every 5 minutes, trying to see if Phillips was moving towards either hatch.
But even Moosey had to sleep, and Hammock and Young Guy eventually drifted off too. That left only Audie.
It was 2 a.m. on April 10th, day 3 of the ordeal.
Audie had to go to the bathroom. There were no toilets on board, so he stepped out of the back hatch to pee off the side. He put down his AK-47 to do so.
A surge of adrenaline shot through Phillips. He'd never have a better chance. He quietly got to his feet, knowing he couldn't wake the other pirates.
Slowly, Phillips walked towards Audie. Then he ran towards him as fast as he could. Richard Phillips gave Audie a hard shove, then another, and Audie screamed and fell into the water.
Phillips thought briefly about grabbing the AK-47, but had no idea how to use one, so he thought, screw it, and dove into the water, swimming like mad.
Up next, we'll find out how Richard Phillips fared in the open seas. Now, back to the story.
Richard Phillips had just shoved a Somali pirate into the water and was making a daring escape himself, swimming for the naval destroyer, USS Bainbridge. He could hear the pirate, Adi Elmi, screaming in Somali, rousing the rest of his captors.
Phillips took a breath, dove down below the surface, and swam for his life. The water was clear, and the moon was bright. Too bright for Phillips' liking. He didn't want to be visible. He estimated the Bainbridge was a half a mile away, but that half mile could be an eternity.
Phillips swam like his life depended on it, because it might. He believed that someone on the Bainbridge, almost certainly multiple someones, were watching the lifeboat. But he knew if the Somalis found him, he was probably doomed. He had to get to that naval ship.
The Somalis turned the lifeboat around to chase Phillips. Phillips once more dove beneath the surface of the water, trying to stay out of sight.
The lifeboat got closer and closer, and then stopped, almost directly on top of Phillips. Phillips hid, treading water, on the starboard edge of the boat, staying in the shadow cast by the lifeboat itself.
But the Navy ship had stopped. Phillips tried to shove the disappointment away. Survival was all that mattered. He realized he didn't have any chance of escaping the pirates and getting to the destroyer, so he surfaced.
As he broke the surface of the water, he grabbed Audie, trying to pull him under. Audie clung to the lifeboat's safety rope. Phillips struggled to hold Audie under, but he couldn't get leverage, so he dove back below.
When he surfaced again, another pirate aimed an AK-47 in his direction and fired. He'd gotten so close to escape, and now it had been taken away. And things were about to get much worse for him.
From this point on, the pirates were a lot less friendly.
Two of the pirates dragged Richard Phillips on board while a third held him at gunpoint. They started beating him with their fists and the 9mm.
Phillips wrote that he got lucky in one respect. The pirates were not strong enough to hit him hard. Eventually, they stopped beating him.
They tied him to a horizontal bar running across the width of the lifeboat. Andrew Taylor, who works with the National Hostage Survival Training Center, notes that for a kidnapping victim, trying to escape is far and away the riskiest thing to do, as opposed to waiting for rescue or a negotiated release.
In his words, quote, recognize that you are betting with your life, end quote.
Taylor says that you should only try to escape if the risk of not escaping is greater to you. It's hard to say whether Phillips made the right call here.
Given his belief that the Navy was only there to escort the pirates and would not attempt a rescue, it wasn't a bad choice in this specific situation.
But all the trust and empathy Phillips had built with the pirates was now gone. All he could do now was survive and hope that the Navy had a plan.
Moosey screamed that two of his men should guard Phillips at all times.
Phillips learned later that sailors on the Bainbridge would absolutely have intervened if they'd known what was going on. Sailors were closely observing the lifeboat.
But because of the night, the distance, and Phillips' rapid escape, they didn't think the man who jumped was Phillips at first. They actually thought the pirates were taking a swimming break.
Now that Phillips was back, the pirates had to reconsider any demands they might make. They knew Phillips was valuable. Indeed, he was their only leverage. Should they trade him for a small amount of money now, or wait until they'd gotten to the coast so they'd have a stronger position?
They resolved to wait, especially with the mothership out there to potentially turn the tide. They were still hours from the Somali coastline. But Moosey had to know the mothership wouldn't do much against the United States Navy unless it had captured other hostages.
Buying themselves time until they could get safely to Somalia was the pirates' best option. And so the lifeboat chugged along, pursued by the destroyer.
The Navy first made contact with the pirates on the evening of April 10th at 6 p.m. over the radio. The negotiator asked if Phillips was okay, and after confirming he was, asked to talk to Moosey. This initial contact was to try and suss out if Moosey was open to continuing the conversation.
The Navy must have been satisfied with Moosey's response because they didn't take action against the lifeboat that night.
But that night, the pirates conducted their first mock execution of Richard Phillips. They dragged him up, and Moosey stared at him. Phillips was not the friendly, incompetent captain they'd thought. He was wily, devious, and mentally tough. He'd nearly killed Oddie.
The pirates had to make sure he didn't escape again, and that meant they'd have to break him. When the pirates started chanting in Somali, Phillips realized for the first time that he might not get off that lifeboat alive.
After what seemed like an eternity of chanting, Moosey handed the loaded handgun to Oddie.
And then came a loud explosion, and Phillips saw stars.
At first, he thought he'd been shot in the head, but he quickly realized he was still alive.
Instead of shooting, Oddie had whacked Phillips with the butt of his gun. Perhaps that was the plan all along.
Phillips stood there, stunned. What was that for? Probably for the escape attempt, he thought. Still, he was angry. What did you do? He yelled to Moosey.
Did you just try to kill me? Phillips shouted. Shut up, replied Moosey.
Phillips was having none of it. Oh, you mean, please be quiet, Captain. Oddie laughed at this. Even Moosey laughed.
As the blood ran down Phillips' face, he tried to figure out what was going on. A mock execution, he decided. They were trying to wear him down. But why? He knew they were bluffing. Or were they? Richard Phillips thought of his family, and although he was not the most religious man, he begged God for the strength to survive this.
The pirates had to keep Richard Phillips alive, but obedient. If he escaped the lifeboat again, the Navy could safely open fire and kill them.
Phillips didn't believe the Navy would intervene yet, but the pirates absolutely did.
So the next morning, April 11th, the Somali interpreter and negotiator once again made contact with Moosey, conveying preliminary introductions. They wanted to see if Moosey was open to further communication. Moosey, keeping his cards close to his chest, said he was.
Bizarrely, after the exchange, Moosey told Phillips that he, Moosey, worked for the Navy and knew the negotiator, that this was all a training mission.
Moosey was continuing the mind games, and Phillips was so exhausted and sleep-deprived that they started to work. The sly pirate continued, claiming that Shane Murphy had known all along this was just a test.
Phillips recalled Shane Murphy's face when the pirates first attacked and knew they were lying.
But Moosey wouldn't back down. He said he was going to work on a U.S. ship after this training exercise, that Americans drank beer and were lazy.
By contrast, Musi claimed he was a 24/7 sailor. He could do anything. We don't know what Musi's motivation here was, but Phillips figured it might have been just to mess with him or to keep things unpredictable. It might even have been an attempt to reduce the hostage's desire to escape.
The Navy felt things were not moving quickly enough, but they had a new tool in their kit to use. The USS Halliburton had joined the Bainbridge, and the Halliburton had two Seahawk helicopters on board.
The Seahawks immediately started hovering near the bow of the lifeboat, blocking the pirates' best path to the Somali coast.
Audie had an idea. He went to the fuel buckets and lined them up on the deck. If the helicopters came too close, the pirates could simply burn down the boat.
It was insane and suicidal. It might have been a bluff, or it might have been the first indication that Audie had given up on escaping alive. Phillips couldn't be sure. At this point, having lost out on millions with the Navy in pursuit, maybe the pirates really did believe death was preferable to capture.
Richard Phillips wasn't at that point yet, but he was exhausted. He'd been in the lifeboat almost 3 full days now.
Although the negotiator reached out one more time, Musi was not interested in opening negotiations. He had to believe reinforcements were coming, and he knew that if he could just stall until that happened, he could get his comrades out of this. With no further progress on the negotiations, the sun set.
It was just after midnight on April 11th. Day 4 had begun, and the pirates were still approximately 276 miles from the coastline. Musi knew that if they took the straightest route to the coast, they'd land in a rival warlord's territory. No matter, that'd be a better problem for them to have than this one. That night, the Somali interpreter reached out to the pirates again, this time in person.
Musi stepped outside onto the back of the lifeboat to speak to the interpreter face to face. The other three pirates followed Musi onto the tiny deck to talk. The interpreter kept his voice friendly, like he was talking to a long-lost college buddy.
But was this real? Phillips knew he was sleep-deprived and had to make sure he was awake. But he wasn't dreaming. It seemed real.
The Navy says the conversation Phillips heard was only over the radio. It's possible that due to sleep deprivation, Phillips interpreted the radio conversation as taking place in person.
The gist of the conversation was the same. The interpreter was trying to get the pirates to see the reality of their situation. They were on a tiny, under-equipped craft, outnumbered and outgunned.
The naval destroyers could intercept any reinforcements, and the Seahawks could almost certainly stop the pirates from reaching land.
That morning, the Navy sent the helicopters close to the lifeboat again, but Musi got on the radio and yelled, "No action! No military action!" He threatened to kill the hostage.
The stakes kept going up. The Navy couldn't be sure that the pirates wouldn't kill Phillips, so they flew off.
Musi tried to brag about his past pirating history to Phillips, claiming he took a French cargo ship and made $6 million for his troubles. Phillips, still tied up, didn't believe him and asked, "What are you still doing here?"
Musi brushed this off. Then one of the Navy's inflatable rafts, an outboard motorboat called a Zodiac, made its first appearance.
Phillips got a flash of hope when he saw a sailor with a bowgun. But the Navy couldn't act yet. They had the authorization to use force to take the pirates out, but they had to make sure Phillips was safe first. The pirates had Phillips wave to the boat to confirm that he was alive and basically unharmed.
That was enough for now. The Navy wasn't about to do anything rash. The Zodiac sailors scoped out the lifeboat, collecting as much visual information as possible, then they left.
After the Zodiac had returned to the Bainbridge, the pirates, concerned that Phillips' morale had risen, started playing mind games with him.
They had to make sure his spirit stayed low enough that he didn't escape, so they dragged him up for another mock execution.
The pirates knew if Phillips grabbed one of their guns, it could be over for them in a heartbeat. That had to be prevented. so they continued the mind games.
Musi wanted as much control as possible over Phillips, given all the variables he had to deal with. The two Navy destroyers, the helicopters, the unknown amount of fuel remaining on the lifeboat, the smaller boats the Navy could send out at will with sailors armed to the teeth.
Musi made sure to tell his three pirates, stay away from the windows. Don't give the Navy any openings, no matter how small.
Nerves of steel had gotten them this far, and nerves of steel would get them back to Somalia with enough cash to retire. This could still be a big win for them.
Day 5. The Navy sent its Zodiac boats back to the lifeboat, wanting to make sure that Richard Phillips was still alive and to get more intel on the positioning of the pirates in case things got worse.
To move the negotiations forward, the Navy invited Musi to come with them aboard the Bainbridge and negotiate in person for ransom and conditions. Musi held his breath when he got the offer. He knew that the chances of the pirates getting a ransom increased if he got on board.
But he also knew he could be walking into a trap, and he was starting to have doubts. This was supposed to be a clean getaway. Reinforcements hadn't shown up. They had the U.S. Navy on top of them. Phillips nearly escaped. How could he get himself out of this mess?
When we come back, Abduwali Musi's fateful decision. Now back to the story. How could Abduwali Musi get himself and his friends out of this mess? They were his responsibility. He was the captain.
Musi knew the Navy wouldn't try anything while his fellow pirates held Phillips hostage. All they had to do was keep their cool. Surely they can do that, right?
Deep down, Musi may have figured that his odds of survival were better aboard the naval vessel. He at least wouldn't get shot by a sniper or drown if the lifeboat was destroyed. Here goes nothing, Musi thought, and stepped off the lifeboat onto the Zodiac.
But with Musi aboard the Bainbridge, the Navy would control when he could talk to his men, or if he could talk to them at all. The Navy knew that three pirates were a lot easier to manage than four.
After confirming that Phillips was all right, the small boat pulled back and returned to the Bainbridge with Abduwali Musi aboard. Musi didn't know it, but he would never return to the lifeboat or see his three comrades again.
The remaining Somalis were still playing mind games with Phillips, now having him tie proper knots and then untie them. There was also the uncomfortable question of who was now in charge, a question all three wanted to put off as long as possible.
That afternoon, Phillips felt dizzy, like he was going to collapse. Even though they'd been conducting mock executions on him, the pirates didn't want anything to happen to their only piece of leverage.
Phillips was alternating between trying to accept his death and maddening frustration. He was sick of the heat, sick of the pirates, sick of the damn knots. It was a strange sort of whiplash.
Phillips would try to steel himself for his death, thinking of his wife and college-age kids back in Vermont, and then get angry. He was not going to let the pirates beat him. This had to be coming to an end soon, didn't it?
The Navy, knowing the pirates no longer had their leader, sensed an opportunity and offered to tow the lifeboat.
An anonymous negotiator interviewed by Vice praises the Navy here and says that if you ever have control of a hostage situation, splitting the kidnapping leader from the rest of the group is a great way to sow internal dissent.
The Bainbridge sent another Zodiac boat with plums and fish to the lifeboat and to make the towing offer in person. The Navy also took the chance to hand a clean, bright yellow shirt over to Phillips. If he put the shirt on, it'd be easy for Navy snipers to tell him apart from the pirates.
The pirates, surprisingly, agreed to let the Bainbridge tow them, handing all control of their movement over to the Navy.
The lifeboat was now within 20 miles of the Somali coast, and the Navy wanted to make sure the pirates never reached land with Phillips. But the pirates didn't want to land either, not in this area of the coast, which was controlled by a rival warlord.
Once the tow line started, the atmosphere on board soured. The remaining pirates, worried about Moosey's absence and jockeying for leadership, began to argue with each other.
Adi and Hammock started picking on Young Guy, calling him a lazy American.
Meanwhile, Phillips was exhausted, sore, and hot. He started demanding to jump in the water to cool off. He didn't think the pirates would let him, but at this point, he didn't care.
Young Guy seethed. He'd been carrying his weight all this way. He'd have their backs on board the Maersk. He hadn't been captured like their so-called leader. And where was their leader? Why hadn't he stayed on the boat?
Adi and Hammock had to be wondering the same thing. Was Moosey even still alive? If so, why wasn't he contacting them? Was he going to sell them out?
Young Guy wanted Phillips to lie on the lifeboat's floor, but Phillips refused. Young Guy loosened the ropes around Phillips' legs to increase his circulation. Maybe that would shut him up and stop Phillips complaining.
Phillips knew that he could get under the pirate's skin just by showing them he wasn't giving in, and he wouldn't let them gain an inch.
The pirates weren't going to let that happen. They started yelling at Phillips. Frustration poured out of them. He was a lazy American. He had lied to them, betrayed them. It was his fault they were trapped on this lifeboat.
This was beyond the usual intimidation tactics. This was real. They were raging at Phillips, the cause of all their problems. Where was Moosey? What had Phillips done with Moosey?
Phillips was alarmed at their irrationality. He had no idea why Moosey hadn't contacted them. What the hell was wrong with them?
The pirates screamed that they were going to kill Phillips, slit his throat. And Phillips realized, with horror, that they'd given up on any chance of survival. They were going down and wanted to take him with them out of sheer spite.
Phillips knew he had to act, and he had little left to lose. He was sick of this lifeboat. At least the pirates hadn't had to be tied up and abused. It was their own damn fault for breaking the deal and kidnapping him. They could have walked away $30,000 richer. Yes, he thought to himself, get angry.
I'm sick of this, Phillips said, kicked the ropes off his feet, and started for the boat's exit. Down, down, said Hammock. You can't leave. So shoot me, said Phillips.
There was a flash of gunfire, and Phillips jumped back into his seat. Young Guy had fired a very loud warning shot and was aiming his AK-47 at Phillips' back.
What's going on in there? Shouted a female voice from outside. It was a Navy sailor on board a Zodiac. No problem, no problem, shouted Adi and Hammock. Relax.
There was zero chance of anyone relaxing.
Phillips got down on the floor, figuring he'd finally lie down. The pirates started screaming at each other. They might go for one another's throats at any moment.
And then came gunshots. Too many gunshots. Phillips grabbed the leg of a chair and hung on for dear life, thinking he might have finally used up his lucky breaks. What did you do? He yelled at the pirates. There was no response.
He assumed the pirates had finally broken down and started shooting at one another. Was he dead? Was this the end?
And then he heard a new voice, thank goodness. An American one, somehow on board the boat. Are you okay?
Phillips checked himself. No gunshot wounds. How is that possible? Despite the heat stroke and psychological warfare, all things considered, he'd supposed, he'd been worse.
I'm fine, he said. But who are you?
The man was a Navy SEAL. And when Phillips looked up, he saw a young guy lying next to him, bleeding from his head. Young guy gasped for breath, moaned, and tried to say something to Phillips, but no words came out.
Young guy twitched and stopped moving, dead. Phillips felt a brief moment of sympathy for his captor. Young guy had been young enough to go to college. What had led him into this disaster?
The Navy SEALs had finally gotten the opportunity they needed when Phillips lay down. He had unwittingly given the Navy SEALs a clear shot at all three pirates. All three pirates had been shot in the head. Clean kills.
The naval commander gave the go-ahead to fire when he saw that one of the pirates was pointing the AK-47 at Phillips' head. They just had to take out all three pirates at once.
The SEALs took Phillips on board the Zodiac, and the boat raced back to the Bainbridge. Richard Phillips breathed in the ocean air. Free. He was free. He would see his family again.
Phillips was in surprisingly good spirits on board the boat. Looking back, he attributes this to his pragmatism. He'd been on a tiny, overheated lifeboat with pirates. Now he was on board a Navy ship. Much better.
Phillips' five-day ordeal was over. He could finally walk aboard a ship without having his feet burned, and he could finally take a shower.
Shortly after Phillips was rescued, the Navy confirmed that negotiations were close to breaking down and that Moosey was not going to go back to the lifeboat. He had sensed correctly that things were about to go very wrong.
Abdulwali Moosey was officially taken into custody and transported back to America, where he was tried for piracy, but pleaded guilty to hijacking, kidnapping, and hostage-taking charges in order to avoid charges of piracy and possession of a machine gun as part of a deal. He was sentenced to 33 years and 9 months in prison. He is currently serving his time in South Carolina.
Throughout the first phase of the crisis, on board the Maersk, the American crew used every trick in the book to communicate with each other. Phillips' simple tactic of keeping up a casual but loud conversation with Moosey as they searched the boat may have saved crew members' lives, since at least three crew members were sneaking around, trying to help Phillips and spy on the pirates.
This situation had a near-perfect outcome. Richard Phillips was rescued, alive, and essentially unharmed. Abdulwali Moosey was taken into custody, also alive, and the three other pirates were killed. The Navy and the SEAL team snipers' responses were textbook.
The company that owned the Maersk, Alabama, immediately changed policies following the pirate attack and has had armed security on board since May 2009. The armed guards have foiled two subsequent pirate attacks.
One big lesson from this is that it's worth the liability risk to have weapons on board civilian cargo ships, along with people trained to use them. Keep them locked up, but having guns on the ship could have thwarted the pirates from ever getting on board.
Although negotiations between the Navy and the pirates were ultimately unsuccessful, they did succeed in keeping Richard Phillips alive and mostly unharmed. That's no small feat.
While it's hard to say why negotiations didn't work, part of the difficulty seems to have been the pirates' unreasonable demands. Moosey mentioning that he'd gotten $6 million for a previous piracy attack and stating that Phillips wasn't worth the trouble for just $2 million suggests that their demands were seriously unrealistic.
It's unknown if any specific offers were made to the pirates, but it seems probable the Navy would have kept its word as to a guarantee of the pirates' safety if Phillips was returned unharmed. At bare minimum, they'd want other pirates to know the Navy could be trusted in the case of a future pirate attack.
The Navy did have access to a lot of resources that hostage negotiators don't often have, like helicopters and snipers.
But they had to deal with a continuously moving target, on water, with four jumpy hostage takers who were having a series of very bad days.
Richard Phillips' early actions on board the lifeboat to build rapport with the pirates were smart and helped them see him as a human being.
However, his escape attempt drastically escalated the situation. It probably would have been better had he stayed on board. It's possible that had he not made his attempt, the pirates would have released him in exchange for money.
But given what he knew at the time, it's hard to fault him. He did not anticipate that the Navy would attempt to rescue him, and he knew his chances of survival would drop drastically if the lifeboat reached the Somali coast.
The crew of the Maersk, Alabama, should be commended for their continuous quick thinking and level-headedness. Phillips, Shane Murphy, and Chief Engineer Mike Perry all shined that day.
And the U.S. Navy now has a model for how to handle piracy, though with the deaths of three of the Somali pirates, using that model may not be the wisest plan, since it led to the loss of life, an outcome all hostage negotiators try to avoid at all costs, according to former U.S. hostage negotiator Thomas Strentz.
Now that other Somali pirates know what they're up against and what will happen if they take an American ship again, they'll be a lot more reluctant to attack one in the future.
Thanks again for tuning in to Hostage. We will be back Thursday with a new episode.
You can find more episodes of Hostage, as well as all of Parcast's other podcasts, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, or your favorite podcast directory.
Several of you have asked how to help us. If you enjoy the show, the best way to help is to leave a 5-star review.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. We'll see you next time.
In the meantime, don't take your freedom for granted. Hostage was created by Max Cutler, is a production of Cutler Media, and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound designed by Michael Langsner, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Paul Mahler, and Aidan Conley. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. Hostage is written by Greg Macklin and stars Irma Blanco and Carter Roy.